and you're listening to Radio Catskill. This is your community radio station. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you for being here with us during All Things Considered. And as we said at the beginning of the news this afternoon, just 2 weeks ago, there were two confirmed active cases of COVID-19 in Sullivan County. Today, Sullivan County Public Health's dashboard says there are 30 active cases, and some of this is due to positive coronavirus exposures at three separate locations in Monticello and in Liberty, as announced in three public health advisories that were issued by public health that we've been telling you about here on Radio Catskill. Joining us now to follow up on all of this is Sullivan County Public Health Director Nancy McGraw. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So it's been a busy week, I assume, with these three different announcements. And just to remind people quickly, there was an advisory about anyone who visited Nelly's Sports Bar in Monticello on August 15th. Then there was an advisory about anybody that was at Ahava Medical and Rehabilitation Urgent Care Center in Liberty on August 19th, 20th, 21st, 24th, or 25th. And then anybody who was at Apple Tree Kosher Supermarket in Liberty on August 23rd and 24th, and there was a contagious employee there. So those are the three advisories that we've gotten. Have you encountered any other outbreaks since then?
Well, most of our new cases seem to be related to one of those three. And, you know, contact tracing is really the intervention that we use to kind of track down who our positive cases may have come into close contact with within a certain time period. And, you know, that's how we quickly try to identify other possible exposures and make sure that either those people are quarantined and or they get a test, so that especially if they develop symptoms.
When I announced the Nelly Sports Bar one, at that point it was just when that announcement came out, it was about a week and a half after the date of the possible exposure, which was August 15th. And literally as soon as I read it on the radio, somebody called up. And the first thing they asked me, they said, well, August 15th, does that mean these people have been going around for a week and a half? And how is anybody supposed to know where they've been and what they've done? And my kind of response is like, well, that's literally what the contact tracing is about. But, I mean, that does underscore the challenge, right? I mean, the with a two-week span of possible gap between when people are exposed and when they start to show symptoms, if they're going to, that's 2 weeks that can pass of people going anywhere and doing anything.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why this has been so challenging for communities and for public health, because the more we learn about this virus, you know, the more we're able to tell the public. But that 2 to 14 days is, you know, after someone is exposed, is the time period up until the 14th day when they are contagious. So not everyone develops symptoms right away. Some people can be asymptomatic and have the virus and transmit it to others who are higher risk. That's why it's such a challenge.
Right. And
so it's not that, you know, it's not that someone intentionally went somewhere on the 15th, knowing that they were positive. They likely found out later after that.
And you're able to come up with a date of saying, like, well, you may well have been contagious back to this date. Where were you in that time frame?
Correct.
And one of those places was a sports bar.
Right, right. That's how we try to trace it back.
So
it's important for people to kind of keep track of, you know, where they've been in the last 2 weeks, should they become ill, who they were within 6 feet or closer to. Certainly, indoor places like bars are going to be higher risk, because, you know, a lot of folks are not, they're sitting in close proximity to each other and may not be wearing masks, obviously, if they're drinking.
And you, in that announcement, that press release, that first advisory, one of the things that was mentioned was that, okay, well, this decreases the risk. This is what increases the risk. You say, like, being in an indoor environment. And then it sounded like people not wearing masks raises risk, but you also said people are drinking alcohol. Is that a risk increaser just on its own?
Well, you know, it can be associated with talking and laughing and maybe closer proximity. So yeah, it's a higher risk. Being indoors is not necessarily in and of itself a higher risk. It really has to do with the length of time that and how many people are within close proximity to each other for a longer duration of time and not wearing masks. So, you know, we have had a lot of businesses that are reopening, and we have not seen an increase in cases. So it really does have to do with a multitude of other factors.
Right. And then so each of the things that you advise people to do in that case, like understanding that it's multiple factors, every time you recommend people do something, that's just one part of reducing risk in one of those multiple factors.
Right. Right.
So
you know, wearing masks, and I think people get tired of hearing this, but hand washing frequently is so important, because what do we do without even thinking about it? We often touch our face, right? We touch our noses and our eyes and our mouths, and so that's why the hand washing is so important, as well as wearing the masks.
And you know, it's tough to, when you don't see the consequences right in front of you, I guess it can be tough to keep these things in mind. And this was my fear heading into the warmer months, even as the numbers were still coming down, was that I my job is here to do the news and continue to report on where things are. And so I know as much about this as like the average person out there. And yet I still found myself just able to almost ignore it sometimes. I'm like, well, this isn't good. The weather's getting nicer, the sun's shining. You think that it's a beautiful world out there, but you gotta still try to keep these things in mind. I guess I'm saying, like, you know, so there's an absent-mindedness part of this, but in your press release too, like you've reminded people this is not the time to become complacent, and to think that we're past this is foolish. Have you been seeing? Have you been encountering a lot of foolishness out there in Sullivan County?
Well, when I alluded to the foolishness part, it's you know, purposely being in large crowds and not wearing a mask and sort of taking unnecessary risks, and that's where we're seeing some of these cases resulting from. I think that it's easy for all of us to become complacent. We certainly breathed a sigh of relief in June and July, and most of August, when our cases got number of active cases got really low, and we're like, whew, you know, it was a rough few months. Hopefully, you know, we're gonna stay low, and you know, there can be that thought, well, maybe this is it. But given what we've seen going on around the rest of the country, we know that the virus is still being transmitted. A lot of people travel, go on vacations, and come back, and the virus doesn't just go away. It has to have a host to be transmitted. So all it takes is, you know, a few cases to start popping up here and there and spreading. And, you know, we'll be right back up to high numbers. Now, hopefully, with our aggressive isolation and quarantine and contact tracing, we can get those numbers back down. I think that there's a certain amount of what I like to call coronavirus fatigue in the population, and we certainly all feel it. We've never experienced a pandemic before, certainly not in our lifetimes, and there's a lot of confusing information on the news. conflicting information. So we like to remind people that let's go back to basics. The important message is prevention and wearing a mask and frequent hand washing and social distancing. So, you know, it is discouraging to see the cases go back up, but I think it's hopeful that, you know, as long as we do our best and our due diligence to be safe and protect others, you know, that we'll get through this too. And, you know, there's a lot of reassuring information out there in terms of, you know, we don't seem to be seen as a nation, people getting, in the general public, getting as sick as they were before, certainly not in New York State. The numbers are really low. But again, people with underlying health conditions and those who are elderly are highest risk. So that's what we need to keep in mind.
As the knowledge of what this thing is, and there's still a lot that we don't know about it, but as the knowledge has continued to increase, you know, around the country, around the world, about the coronavirus, has treatment gotten better? Because as you're saying, like you're seeing, you know, people aren't getting as sick. When I started seeing the numbers of newly infected in Florida going up, the first thing I thought was, oh my gosh, there's going to be people, you know, dying like they were here. But it seems like they've been able to avoid that. I mean, there are more people dying from it, but it doesn't seem to be the same rate as what we were experiencing in New York State back in April. So is the knowledge helping the treatment is what I'm asking, even without a vaccine?
Well, I think certainly, you know, as they're doing more and more research, there's something called emergency use authorization of certain medications that may be used for other conditions that might help. And, you know, I'm not going to get into the details of all those things, but there's certainly a lot of journal articles out there that are being published every week. And, you know, our public health experts and medical experts are constantly reviewing that information and sharing that information. And so I think that the treatment is better. The important thing is that if somebody does feel short of breath for a long period of time, has a fever, cough that won't go away, that they seek medical care sooner than later and not wait until they're feeling really sick.
Now, what does this, as I looked at the numbers on the dashboard, like we were in single digits of current active cases for quite a while. There was a little bit of an uptick when there was that potential exposure in Roscoe at the Fireman's Park at a private picnic. And but other than that, it's been pretty low. This number that we're seeing right now of active cases, we haven't had this many since it was June 18th or 19th. And then back then it was it went from like 70 some down to 20 pretty quick. So it's like right now there's 30 active cases, and that's serious. But of course, the numbers still, even though that's 15 times more than there was 2 weeks ago, that's still far less than it was at the worst. So what do the numbers mean in terms of just being able to gauge where we are in terms of risk?
Well, I think we also have to keep in mind whether we're talking about general community risk or a risk in certain locations, because that's why we track clusters. In the case of the bar and one medical facility, you know, anytime, like when we were seeing a large number of cases all at once back in May and June, that had a lot to do with the nursing homes. So the general community risk was much lower than that. So we kind of have to segment the data, and that's what we do, to try to determine locations and exposure risk.
Okay, and any...
And again, those nursing home residents are very excuse me, high risk because of their age and because they tend to have chronic conditions.
You have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not going to ask you to make any predictions, but I am going to ask.
I wish I had a crystal ball.
I know. but I am going to ask you how you're feeling right now. Now, here we are on the eve of September. Schools reopening in various capacities in the area. We've seen this uptick, but it's not what it was. How are you feeling right now as you look to September, October?
Well, we've been doing a lot of work with our school districts, and having meetings indicated that schools will reopen, and schools had to develop and submit reopening plans. Most of the schools have a hybrid approach or a combination thereof, and most of the schools have allowed the parents to select what they're comfortable with in terms of 100% remote at home, online learning, a combination of in-person and home, and all in-person in school. So I think it really depends on the circumstances of family situations and, what parents, teachers, and districts are comfortable with. But obviously we're all feeling nervous. You know, I'm going to be completely honest about that. We've never dealt with this before, so I think going into this, we developed a school district contact tracing and testing plan and shared it. We developed it in conjunction with the schools and have shared that. And all of the counties, or most of the counties, county health departments across the state have done the same thing, because we want to be a resource for the schools and to develop a very clear communication plan in terms of, you know, what do we do in different scenarios where, you know, someone has a fever or someone has some symptoms, a protocol for responding right away, where to go to get tested, how do you, you know, should you exclude certain students or staff, and that sort of thing. So I think we're feeling as confident as we can right now, knowing that we have those plans in place and that we have a communication plan. It's very fortunate that we have a relatively small rural county, comparatively speaking, you know, to larger cities. And so we're familiar with each other for the most part, in terms of we have developed good, close working relationships with our colleagues in the school districts. And our public health nurses are familiar with the school nurses. And I'm familiar with the administrators at the schools. So I think that we'll see how it works, and we'll do the best we can. People are watching what's happening with colleges as they start to reopen, and you're seeing lots of cases pop up where they're having parties and they're suspending students. And, you know, I think that there's going to be cases, and I think how we approach that proactively and quickly is going to be very helpful for the school districts. And if somebody tests positive, you know, it's important that we approach it with a common sense, rapid approach, and a reassuring approach that shows parents and school districts what steps they can take, and, you know, what are the next steps until we get more information in terms of any decision making that takes place.
All right. Well, Nancy McGraw, Public Health Director of Sullivan County, thank you for keeping an eye on all of this. Thank you for everything you're doing, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I'm sure that I'll have a chance to come on again. And I just want to reinforce the message that, you know, wearing masks and frequent hand washing and social distancing is so key to all of this. and that parents should be preparing their children now and having conversations about, you know, what it's going to be like when they return to school, getting them comfortable with wearing masks and frequent hand washing. As we go into fall, we're also looking at flu season, and a lot of those symptoms can be similar. So we're really underscoring the importance of getting everyone vaccinated with the flu shot this fall, including children. That will help a great deal, I think, to prevent the flu and make it easier for doctors to determine and rule out, you know, other illnesses like COVID.
All right. Well, we'll be in touch with you then, and we'll keep getting the word out there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. All right, take care.
Great. Again, that was Public Health Director for Sullivan County. That was Nancy McGraw. Thank you for listening. This is WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. We're getting into hour three of All Things Considered right now. Do stay tuned right here.